Welcome to KBS World Radio, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Books on Demand, a show that introduces a treasure trove of Korean short stories to the global audiences. Today we introduce the last of the three-part series, Out of the Blue by Yeom Sang-seop. I'm your host Karen Choi, and please stay tuned. Yeom Sang-seop's Out of the Blue takes place in 1918, a year before the March 1st movement. Lee In-hwa, a Korean student studying in Tokyo, receives news that his wife is dying and goes to see her in his hometown. During his trip back home, he witnesses the harsh reality of his country and people. Lee In-hwa arrives in Seoul early in the morning and takes a rickshaw across the snow-covered street to go home. More than a foot of snow came down overnight. The rickshaw man tried to pull as hard as he could, but the wheels kept skidding. There weren't that many people out on the street yet. Why is she still waiting for a husband like me? By the time he got home, every member of his family was up and waiting for him. Lee In-hwa bowed to his father before he went to see his wife.
My wife, who had been in a coma, stared at me before widening her chapped lips to smile at me. But she turned her gaze away when her eyes teared up. The room stank since the screen had trapped the smell of a sick woman's urine and feces, mixed in with the bitter odor of medicine, sickening someone who was exhausted from an overnight train ride. But I couldn't leave right there and then, so I sat next to her. Don't cry. It'll make you feel worse. I didn't know what else to say, having barely gotten those words out, so I just sat there stupidly. Have you seen our son, Jungi? She wiped away the tears and whispered that question in a withering voice. Were those the hands that caressed me? The plump, dainty hands? My heart ached and I grew sullen. I'm going to die anyway, but please take care of Jungi. She apparently wanted to bawl, but, completely drained, only tears flowed down her face. Don't say that. Nobody is dying. You'll get better if you don't worry about it. I don't want to live any longer. Just take care of our son. I didn't know what to say.
When In-hwa finished comforting his wife, his father called him to his room. Next to his father sat Dr. Kim. The doctor had lived in Mr. Seo's house, a local resident who became a viscount for siding with the Japanese during the annexation of Korea. But he was kicked out after the viscount died and now eked out a living by helping the Japanese aristocrats with funeral procedures. My father told me in detail how her illness had progressed, how much medicine she took, and how long it took for the medicine to take effect and so on. But I had no idea what he was talking about. You should have taken her to the Japanese hospital to have her boil pierced immediately, I interrupted. Western doctors don't know anything. Your brother said the same thing, so I told him that I'd rather kill her with my own hands, my father retorted in anger. Inua's father didn't trust Western medicine, so rather than operating on his daughter-in-law's boil, he insisted on treating her only with Korean medicine. I left father and went to my room to smoke when a stranger came to see me. He said he was transferred from a police station in Tokyo to the Jongno police station to tail me until I left Korea. He said he wouldn't follow me all the time, but asked me to notify him when I happened to go outside. I said whatever. In-hwa stayed inside for all 3 days he was in Seoul while his father went out every day.
Once he finished breakfast, father would visit Dr. Kim and come home drunk at dusk or bring a bunch of friends with him. My cousin told me that father was busy with the annual meeting of his club. Doesn't he know that Dr. Kim is trying to work him up for some money? How should I know? He could be aiming for the council member title. Who knows? He might end up being the vice president of the Privy Council. Why is he working so hard to have that seat anyway? I wonder why Dr. Kim wants father to do something he can't. Well, Dr. Kim claims he's very close to the Governor General and the Japanese Administrative Superintendent. He's just trying to talk father into giving him a house since he lost the one that belonged to Viscount So.
Inoue isn't pleased to see Dr. Kim sweet-talking to his father. Here's Bang Min-ho, professor of Korean literature at Seoul National University, explaining the Dr. Kim character.
Dr. Kim is the villain in this story, someone who sucks up to the ruling class to gain a social position or material profits, or to live more comfortably. In fact, there were numerous people like him during the 1910s, people who were directly opposite of the spirit of the March 1st movement. Yeom Sang-yup used Lee In-hwa to denounce such traitors of the people.
A
week after he arrived in Seoul, Lee In-hwa wondered if Eun-la came to Seoul after all. So he went to see Pyeong-hwa to say hello and ask after her. I heard that she came to Korea. I meant to see her, but I got so busy. Didn't Eun-la come to see you? No. Why? Is she here in Korea? Pyeong-hwa's wife had no idea that Eun-la was planning on visiting them. Pyeong-hwa, pretending not to hear her, started changing his clothes. Inoue suspected that they were hiding the fact that Eun-la was indeed in Korea, but he was more frustrated that Pyeong-hwa's wife didn't take issue with the affair between her husband and Eun-la. Inoue refused Pyeong-hwa's offer to have a drink and came home to find another drinking party underway. A drink in the morning, a drink in the afternoon, and another drink in the evening. A drink for the rich and a drink for the poor. There is no way or means other than a drink. They are not living, but being dragged aimlessly, maybe being dragged to a grave. But nowadays, they seem to be fighting to not be dragged off to a public cemetery. Anyway, taking away drinks from today's Koreans is like urging them to take their own lives. Poor. Drink up and forget. That must be their only view of life. Inhwa's wife died a few days later. She married 13-year-old Inhwa when she was 15. They were married for nearly 10 years, but since Inhwa went to Japan at age 15, they were a married couple in name only. I was dead set against taking her body all the way to Cheongju. I vehemently opposed holding a 5-day funeral, so she was interred in a public cemetery 3 days later. People from her family were upset, probably thinking I was cold-hearted or relieved by her death, but I insisted anyway. Inoue was relieved and felt liberated after the funeral, but at the same time, he sort of missed his wife. When she was alive, I behaved heartlessly, not caring whether she died or not. But after I came home from burying her, I felt a part of me was missing and regretted my actions in the past. I realized that my heart was filling up with sympathy for her, a sentiment never imagined possible when she was alive. Inoue was having a change of heart after his wife's death. Here's literary critic Chun So-young to explain how the wife's death aroused Lee In-hwa.
The relationship between the protagonist and his wife was a sad one. Their marriage was arranged by their families when they were still young, and it probably wasn't easy for them to feel affection for each other, which was why Lee In-hwa acted so cold-heartedly toward his wife. But when his wife died, he started feeling sympathy and regret. This change of heart occurred about the same time as his attitude changed toward Korea. At first, he was indifferent to Korea's predicament, but as he traveled back to Korea, he came to realize the painful reality of his country and thought about the fate of himself and his people. His feelings toward his wife changed as well, and he finally decided to live as a Korean who no longer ignores Korea's reality.
때문에 아내에 대한 생각도 바뀌었고 결국 조선의 현실을 외면하지 않는 조선인으로 살아가야겠다는 결심을 합니다.
While packing for his trip back to Japan, Inoue finds a letter from Shizuko. He must have put it aside because it had arrived during the funeral. I seem to have just woken up from a nightmare. As you said earlier, thinking long and hard opened up a new path for me. My six-month experience at the restaurant was dark and rough, but I think I found a new path even in the midst of that life. Life seems to be built on agony. I feel sorry for you because you struggle to achieve bigger things in life rather than address your complaints and dissatisfactions. But I wanted to say that because I also admire you for it. A person probably has to go through hardship to be reborn. Shizuko wrote in her letter that she plans to go to Doshisha University. The letter was full of hope and excitement. Inoue wrote back to her.
I felt obligated to save myself as well. Also, it was time for me to fulfill my duty of finding a new path on my own. My surroundings are much like a public cemetery. How can I hope to breathe and dance in the city of flowers when I sit inside a grave filled with lifeless people in white and goblins running rampant in daylight? The only thing that will visit my fragile self is suffocation. It's not a happy suffocation. Intoxicated by the scent of roses, but a torturous suffocation of maggots slowly fossilizing in the graves. I have to escape from this suffocation first. Have you seen a country where primary school teachers step up to teach while carrying a saber? I am a member of such a country. They say that the stink of blood from the horrifying carnage is dissipating in Europe, and an armistice treaty is being written up. I think they've put down useless weapons and begun to think about the revival of mankind. The way of literature is to find a free and true life, and its virtue is to live it.
The day Inoue left for Japan, Pyeonghwa and his wife, his cousins, and Eulla came to see him off.
Eulla stood vacantly without saying anything, and Pyeonghwa and his wife yawned as they checked the clock on the platform. When the train was about to depart, my cousin came toward me. Have you thought about remarrying when you visit again next spring? How can I, when I'm just getting out of the grave? I'll think about it when I get to brag about a vacation home I'll buy in the spring.
So what happened to Inoue once he returned to Japan? Literary critic Chun So-young answers that question.
결말에서 주인공은 도쿄로 다시 돌아갑니다. 하지만 그의 생각은
The protagonist returns to Tokyo in the end, but he has changed completely since he left Japan. His letter to Shizuko said it all. We could tell that he is determined to discard his old self that was indifferent to the reality of a colony and to find a new and better life. The story doesn't tell us if the protagonist actually puts his thoughts into action after he returned to Tokyo. But we can guess what kind of changes Inoue underwent based on Yum Sang-yup's life. Immediately after the March 1st movement, Yum wrote a declaration of independence and distributed the copies in Osaka. Many Koreans who lived through the military rule of the 1910s must have thought the same. They faced a harsh truth and decided to do whatever they can to change the world. Their determination and fortitude came together to set off the loud calls of Korea's independence all over the country on March 1st, 1919.
작은 의지가 모이고 또 모여서 1919년 3월 1일 조선의 전국에서 만세 소리가 울려 퍼지게 된 것입니다.
Thank you for tuning in to Books on Demand. This week's episode was the last part of Out of the Blue by Yum Sang-seop. This has been Karen Choi, and please join me again next week.